Okay, this is interviewing Dr. Simon at Montreal on 17 August 1979. Could you tell me what was your educational background and how you first came into contact with radio astronomy?
The background is what we call license of science.
Right.
So I don't know exactly what
it's not physics, but it's more general than that.
It is physics, chemistry,
right,
and mathematics.
Right. Okay.
Yes. So I try to do when I joined the group in radio astronomy. In fact, it was not really my choice. I was interested to join research, and I met a scientist, and he told me that the best would be to be in this École Normale Supérieure. So I met the director of the École Normale, and we visited the institute, and he told me, what do you want? And my reply was, what is the best for me? And so he invited me to join the group of radio astronomy. It was a small group. At this time, we were maybe five or six.
Well, now, what year is this now?
52.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand this director, Monsieur Rocard, had in mind that this group will evolve, and probably there is some hope of a new field, so probably something to do.
Yeah.
And my background was not really especially for this purpose.
Right. It was just by accident, it seems, that you...
Yes. Anyway, it was interesting because our first program, plans, was to build this big interferometer at Nancy. So, of course, Bloom at this time was studying the receiver, but the problem was to find a field. And one member of the group was his father. His was notary. How do you
notary public?
Or is it? Where you register.
Yeah, that's right, notary public, it is in English. Yeah.
In this near Bourges.
Yeah.
And he told us that someone could sell to us a big field, as big as we want.
I see.
Because he just need money.
Right.
So it was not so far from Paris. There is no real industry in this part of France, or the industry was in Valais, so we could expect a quiet place for radio astronomy. And I remember the directory of École Normale requested some measurement to see if the field was or was not disturbed by some emission.
Right.
So we went, we had a small engine who could work just by hand.
It was a generator, a diesel?
Small generator. Right. No, it was used on the plan. It was after war, so we have this kind
surplus,
of surplus,
right,
yes.
Yeah.
And Bloom had a small receiver, and so we put an antenna, and we tried to see.
Yeah.
But really, it was just to do something, because we will put a big mirror.
Far bigger than that.
So it was just to do something. Right. But I remember very well this time.
Now, this was the Nansei site.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so it was quite satisfactory. And
yes.
Now, is this is 1952, though, that
oh,
or is this a little bit later?
It was 54.
54, I see.
Probably. Yes.
I have some of those early papers about Nansei, so I can check that.
Yes.
But
yes.
What did you do for the first 2 years that you were there, though, before then?
Oh, at this time we had no data. I mean, we do not get our own data because we did not have a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to make some thesis, and I continued a work. It was started by no, he's not here. Maybe you can stop.
Okay, sure.
A work was started by Dennis on some relationship between sunspot with what we call at this time noise storm,
right,
or sunspot without noise storm,
right,
and the geomagnetic activity. So I use extensively data from quarterly bulletin on solar activity, a report of sunspot, and geomagnetic indices,
right,
to carry out some statistical study concerning this kind of relationship. At this time, we have no idea about type 4 burst or event like that. So we just begin to understand that some flares are related to high level of noise storm and could produce geomagnetic storm, and other not. And the same kind of relationship for active center. Of course, one can discuss if the property of active center was the result of the flare or was just a property of the active center, but it was this kind of study.
Right. Did you work with the optical astronomers at Midome?
No, not at this time.
Why not?
Because it was just using statistics to say if I have a sunspot of type A, base.
You weren't worried about physical physics of what's going on in the sun?
No.
I see.
Really, at this time, at least at my level, it was just like fishing.
Right. Just looking for a relationship.
Yes. Yeah. But probably it was good because it was the beginning. The first time we understand that flare could have the same chromospheric importance and a different geophysical effect.
Right. And that, was the radio a discriminant between those?
Yes.
And what was the nature of the, how did the radio help you?
A flare with a big noise
storm.
I would say now a burst, type 4 burst and something.
Right.
But at this time we just noticed that there was a big increase of the flux on that day. And 2 days later, on a statistic basis, a sunspot, a geomagnetic storm.
Right.
Yes.
But now, It's my understanding that it was Bachot that first recognized the type 4 verse. Is that correct, or?
Oh, yes. It is correct. In the way that we were working together, and when we were observing with the interferometer, I noticed, but I cannot say I was the first, but I noticed that sometimes the noise term was smooth, and sometimes it was with one burst.
Very ragged, yes. Yeah, right.
And we notice also that at the interferometer, sometimes we could notice very well the secondary lobes. It means a very narrow source.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes not.
Right.
So the main work of Bachot was to study the difference and to see that the first one were related to a flare and the second one was staying for days.
Right.
Yes.
And that was the type 4
yes.
event, yeah.
And as you know, probably our Australian colleague was very unhappy because they had all the data, but it is very curious because in fact, with the spectrograph, they see this type of burst, but it looks like just an increase of the noise. So I don't know what was their reaction.
Yeah.
But we were discovering the type 4 with an equipment. It was not done for that.
Right, right.
Because we just have a very narrow beam.
Perhaps they didn't trust that increase in the noise or something like that. Yeah. So,
and our beam gave us the opportunity to make the difference between
yes, right.
Smooth, in fact, wide band emission and
right. What was the fringe spacing? Do you remember roughly?
You have certainly what? In.
Well, I can look it up.
Yes,
yeah.
It is. If I remember, 1.5 kilometers with 16 antenna.
So 1.5 kilometers, and it's about 1.5 meters.
So
it's just about a thousandth of a three arc minutes, something like that. but now we skipped over a few things here. The construction of the interferometer, you were involved in that?
Oh, let me see. I would say for any not technical work, I mean like put the cable or things
right.
like that.
So no part of the design or anything, but...
No.
So radio engineering is really not part of your background
no.
in any way.
No.
but what was the main purpose for building the interferometer? What was the main hope that the sort of things that it would show?
I think it was a thing to do just because we understood that Australians have several radio interferometers, and if I remember, Christiansen was visiting
yes,
us
correct. Right.
and suggesting the
mm-hmm.
new things to do. But as you could also understand, the main item was that we had in France at this time a very good, you understand French?
Well, some, what?
Long.
Long? A tube.
Tube. A very good tube for this, around this wavelength.
I see.
And...
was that from some French company, you mean?
Yes.
Which company was that?
CSF.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand this was one of the topics for using this wavelength, and also mm-hmm. Probably because yes, we know that there are a lot of activity at this wavelength.
And you just want to get some angular resolution.
Yes.
I guess the best angular resolution at that time was some of the experiments done at Cambridge.
Yes.
But
so big antennas.
Right, but they never kept going. I mean, it was not a permanent sort of. They always did one experiment and that was the end of it. They did not continue. You also apparently did some occultations with the Crab Nebula over several years in the late 50s.
It was, I would say, a rite. You know, the church is ritual.
No. Which church do you mean?
There are ceremonies you have to do. And the occultation of Crab Nebula was something we had to do.
A ritual? Is that what you mean?
Ritual.
Right.
Ritual. Yes.
Right. Every year you had to do the Crab Nebula. But why did you have to do it every year? Why?
Because I do not remember. I suppose it was Washoe was the first, or maybe Blue. I do not remember. They make this observation, and they were lucky because the sun was not active,
mm-hmm.
and we observe a, how do you call it, elargissement.
Strengthening, increasing.
Yes, but the size of the source was increasing.
Right.
And this, I don't know if we could understand now. Not only the size was increasing, but the flux.
This is of Taurus A.
Yes. The flux was increasing. So we have yearly to come back and
check that.
Check that mm-hmm. and try to understand what it means. Yes.
And did it do the same thing the second year?
Sure. I don't know the final explanation. I don't know.
I see. Is this the only publication of that in the Varenna meeting? Is that the only place where this is?
No. There are several papers from Boischot.
I see. So it's under under Boischot's name.
Mrs. Lescarene. Yes.
You just talked about it because you were the one that was at this meeting,
yes,
I see.
Yes,
what were the other rituals? You said were there other ritual things you had to do every year besides the occultation of the crab?
Oh, no. The custom at this time was to all the research scientists spend a few days at Meudon to carry out the program of observation. And starting in 56 or 57, I began to teach at the University of Angers, because I am a priest, so I had to teach in this Catholic university.
Mm-hmm.
So my course was just before the weekend, so it was my privilege to spend the weekend at Meudon on my way back to Paris, at Nancy,
yes.
Back to Paris, to make 4 or 5 days of observation, I do not remember exactly. And I was supposed to bring with me solar activity.
bring it with you.
Yes, right. And sometimes it was true.
Right.
When we are looking at the record now, many records with a strong activity at this time were have my signature.
I see. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, are you a Jesuit?
No.
Okay.
No. not a parish priest, but the same category.
I see. No. But when you were studying for your science degree,
yes.
Was that studying for the priesthood also at the same time? Or?
No, it was after.
After that?
Yes, so this is why I when I began in 1652, I was 31.
I see.
Because I spent 5 or 6 years to study.
Well, I think in all the people I've interviewed that you are the only priest that's ever been in radio astronomy. I think that
could be.
There are some others in astronomy, but not in radio astronomy.
No.
So if we continue on here, it looks like through 1960 that you were mainly working with solar activity and trying to understand
yes.
The nature of that.
Yes.
Are there any other points that we haven't discussed? Here that you can think of?
No. No, at this time, you see, it could be that my background was not good enough, or maybe I was too lazy to study enough. and it was an excuse, but at this time, the data were for Boishaut and for Moniclet.
Mm-hmm.
So even if something we could show them and help them, and certainly also Moniclet is a good scientist, so
mm-hmm.
she could.
So she more or less continued this kind of work that you had been doing.
Not exactly. I came. Before the building of this interferometer. So I passed my thesis in 56,
right.
And the beginning of the radio interferometer is in 56, if I remember.
Something like that, yes.
Yes. So at this time, I do not need any publication. So it was the time we were working to carry out observation to. You know, when you have a new equipment, you have always problem to
right.
understand where is really the beam, how can do, do we have to check
the alignment,
yeah. of antenna, many things like that.
Right.
Mm. No, the only other adventure I could remember is in 54. There was a solar eclipse, and we make a trip in Sweden
mm-hmm.
near Göteborg
yes.
to observe the solar eclipse.
Right.
I was with Blum and Leroux, and I just had to compute how to follow the sun during all this time,
yes.
because it was an altizimuthal system with this big mirror we got after the war.
Würzburg?
Würzburg,
right.
Yes.
So you were going to change it by hand every so
yes,
often to follow
yes,
the
yes,
sun?
Yes,
right.
Follow the sun, yes. And it was a very interesting experience, except did not see the eclipse because the weather was bad, and we see the eclipse because we see it was the night, but we could not follow the eclipse because there was clouds.
But the radio waves you could. But you can see with your eyes.
We did not enjoy.
You do, right, personally, right.
Personally,
right.
Yes.
But you got some useful radio data,
yes,
though.
Yes.
And was that published? It's not here in your name, anyway.
No, I do not remember. It was we had in mind a very ambitious enterprise. Someone was in Tunisia
yes.
to observe the eclipse.
I've talked to him, I can't remember who it was. Was that Denise, maybe?
Cazes, I do not remember.
But anyway, somebody was down there,
yes.
right.
And at where it was near Meudon, we had some observation, and at Göteborg, we get observation. There was probably some publication, but I do not remember exactly.
Did you visit the Naval Research Laboratory group that was there at that time? They also went to that eclipse in Sweden. Do you remember that?
I do not remember. Just I remember probably Bloom told you that we were in this observatory because the Swedish people had an observatory just on the line of the eclipse. And a very group was working on their equipment and many things like that. So, in fact, our equipment were ready. We make the first observation and we understood that we have a few days freeze. So we got the car to enjoy visiting Sweden and Norway. And we came back just a few days before the eclipse. And our Swedish colleague was so astonished that apparently they have sent someone near the boundary to be near the border to be sure that we were really traveling like that.
I see. Amazing.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
That ends the interview with Simone at Montreal on 17 August 79. And this is also defined as the end of the tape.